To proceed now. Now, I have to say to you that I really enjoyed Phil's story. And Phil's story was about John Murray. Anyhow, it's all part of this, of what happened 300 years ago or thereabouts. So, he was part of religious visionaries who at that time were looking not for a vengeful God serving up eternal hellfire and damnation, but of a loving God, a God that was forgiving of our sins and offering up eternal salvation for our souls. Today we will celebrate this remarkable force that swept through North America, emphasizing the gospel of love and the social prophecy of activism of those who came before us. And yes, it's remarkable because in the 1851 census of the United States, there were upwards of 600,000 Universalists identified as being either members of Universalism or adherents to it. And there were even 7,000 people in Canada, which is quite something to think of at that time of a sparsely populated country. Now, our Universalist founders pioneered the questioning mind, the loving and caring spirit, and exhibited a keen sense of justice and equity, remarkable for the time, and created values so prized that they are still to be found in the principles and purposes of the UUA. For example, our first principle: we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But what kind of a world did these early migrants come to, and more important, what kind of religious forces shaped their lives 200, 300 years ago? Well, it was certainly a different time than now. Think on it. We live in a liberal religious community environment shaped by many cultural forces, notably our principles and purposes, but also educational, scientific, philosophical, ecumenical, secular, and political. With modern communications devices bombarding our minds, our brains, our senses, our very beings, 24/7, 365. They lived with the word of mouth and printed material. Period. And remember, most citizens at that time probably had a grade school education. They could barely read. I would guess that their biblical knowledge was sketchy and that they literally believed in a heaven, a hell, resurrection, the day of judgment. And I believe they totally bought into the supernatural expression of the Old Testament, victims of their own superstition and of a general ignorance of the populace. After all, the Bible is the gospel. You can see why people thirsted for a new way, and Universalism's cry to God's love and salvation for all caught them up. What follows are some accounts and profiles of some leading Universalist proponents of the new religion. And also, they were great hymn singers. So I'm hoping you will join in with enthusiasm and verve for our first hymn. And I'd like you to stand as you are able. And we will sing Years Are Coming, published in 1849 by Aidan Ballou, one of the early pioneers of Universalism.
You'll recognize the melody, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Years are coming, speed them onward, when the sword shall gather rust, and the helmet, lance, and falchion sleep at last in silent dust. Earth has heard too long a battle, heard the trumpet's voice too long, but the another age advances, still foretold in ancient song. Years are coming when forever war's dread banner shall be furled, and the angel peace be welcomed, regent of a happy world. Hail with song and glorious era, when the sword shall gather rust, and the helmet, lance, and falchion sleep at last in silent dust.
I think I'm up.
So, John Murray, we heard about him earlier. He was one of the great founders of Universalism. After suffering the bereavement of his wife and daughter in England, as we heard, John Murray immigrated to the New World to start a new life, and his boat got stuck, and the rest is history. Murray had found his calling in the new land. To Murray, we owe the gathering of the early Universalists into one association, one church, one gospel, one love. Indeed, Murray started the first Universalist church in North America in Gloucester, Massachusetts in 1779. It was here he met and married Judith Sargent, a talented author, essayist, and woman of letters. Together, they preached and wrote and published and sang the universal gospel that all are dear to God. Up and down the land they did this, like the great missionaries they were. Early on, Murray and his church won two landmark court victories for religious freedom and separation of church and state. And we all know how important and significant as this is, as the lines get blurred again. They affirmed their right, one, to ordain their own clergy, radical thought, and grant them the right to perform marriages, and to be free of financially supporting the state church. You could say they were disestablishmentarianisms. Ists. And in Massachusetts, yes, it was. The established church was the Unitarian church, so this is interesting. It which illustrates that they were two distinct denominations and were so right up until the 60s. So let us sing with missionary zeal Murray's hymn, "Go Forth, My Friends."
Hark, Jesus says, go forth, my friend, proclaim our truth to all. In
It's Misbehaving. There we are. That hymn takes supposedly the words of Jesus and translates them into an appeal to us. So that might explain the fact that it says, I chose to die. So, John Murray was one of the first . But there were others, many of them, who came after. The person I'm talking about now is Jose Ballou. He was a native of the U.S., born and self-educated farm boy. He became another forceful and passionate advocate for universalism, especially through his writings. A Treatise on Atonement, 1805, was a milestone in advancing the universalist cause, asserting that God was a loving father, not a punitive judge, and that sin was personal, not inherited. He also trained generations of ministers and had thousands of people come to hear him preach. He was a master preacher. One such woman, Mrs. Eben Allen from Halifax, returned there, proselytized her friends, and started a movement that built the first Universalist church in Halifax and in the Maritimes. But these early leaders were also multi-talented. For example, Ballou and three other divines, which is a name for the ministers of the time, I love that word, divines, were tasked by the 1807 convention to write a new songbook. Now, only 1 year later, containing 400 original hymns, it was published, leather-bound, for only 75 cents. That's an amazing story, though, when I think of how long it took them to put together the Unitarian hymn book we use today. And there were many others, moving north, south, west. They took the universal gospel on horseback to every town, city, hamlet, and surrounding crossroads. Because essentially universalism was a religion of the rural areas. In Canada, there was George Rogers in Toronto, Alexander Laurie, and David Levitt in Ontario. Levitt was a skillful debater with a prodigious biblical memory. He loved to take part in marathon debates that could last 2 or 3 days. These religious sporting events were very popular with people, and they were sporting events. And one reported upon in some detail by Philip Hewitt in his book on Universalism in Canada took place in the village of Font Hill in the Niagara Peninsula. A 6-foot-high platform was built for the speakers, and each of whom was given a table and writing materials and a moderator. And debates started every morning at 8 o'clock and went through until 6 p.m. Think of it. Each speaker was limited to 15 minutes at a time. Now, this was 175 years ago. And the audience for that at that time, and it was in an open field, was 1,500 people. Amazing. They say that at one such